listening to CLNS Media, powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/roll. Use our promo code CLNS50 for 50% off your first deposit.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Tatum takes it, makes it.
Oh, Hayward.
Flex on him, Jaylen Brown.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Thank you for joining us here on a Wednesday night as the Celtics are sinking bad. That was one brutal performance. And I'm not usually one to blame the refs. I let you guys do that. But, woo! 129-114 final out of Boston. Celtics, who were 16-1 against teams below 500. Are now losers of two straight against teams that had won 11 and 15 games out of roughly 35-40 coming into this one. Brutal stretch that this team is on defensively. Offensively in this one, I thought they were okay. Some rough finishes inside in the lane. That brutal, horrific shooting stretch to open the game didn't help them at all when they were generating some good looks for Jaylen Brown, Tatum, among others in this one. They got to figure out what they're doing on the perimeter right now because it is bad, it is ugly, and the Spurs, out of all teams, are going to take advantage of that, moving the ball inside and out, getting those runners in the lane to go, getting to the basket again and again. They were scoring from all three levels in this one. They were brutally efficient doing it. Midway through the third quarter, they're shooting upwards of 60% in this one. They finished this game with a clip of 55 on 87 shots. DeMar DeRozan, 10 of 17. Aldridge goes 5 of 11. Trey Lyles hits all four shots that he takes. Brent Forbes, 5 of 10. Murray, 5 of 9. Derek White, 5 of 6. Lonnie Walker, woo! Let me get going about Lonnie Walker. This guy is going to be a star in this league, all star in this league. And I know Popovich been tough on him. He's moved him back to the bench after that stretch he was starting where he scorched the Rockets and was on a very good streak of play after that. He's ridiculous in this one. 19 points off the bench, part of that efficient effort. This guy went 18th to the Spurs in his draft. I remember watching him at Miami. He was part of that good team with Bruce Brown, who's a local area kid. Chris Likes. They had some good wings on that team. There's another name I'm forgetting who was playing there that year. DeJuan Hernandez, who's in the G League now. I believe he's in the Toronto organization. Either that or he's playing on the end of their bench. So in year two, Lonnie Walker, 5 points a game, a rebound a game. He's up to a 12 minutes played per game, 45% from the field, 36% from three. The free throw clip's a little shaky. But he has probably his second best game of the year tonight against the Celtics, moving on and off the ball, getting himself free on the wing. And that's your game. The Spurs burst out to an 8-point lead, 8-0, as the Celtics missed four straight shots to open this one up. And they just ran to the finish line from there. Kemba Walker did a good job freeing up the middle of the lane in his return from his sickness. It was a little shaky whether he was going to play. He starts 3 of 6, misses his threes, but he's a force going inside the lane to free up his teammates for opportunities for assists. A few bad turnovers as the Celtics did up and down this game. But in the third quarter, Celtics are on a hefty run. They get within 8 points. I mean, they were trailing by 20 in this one. For the first time all year, the Celtics went down by 20. They get to within 8 midway through the third quarter. Kemba gets pummeled by LaMarcus Aldridge. goes to the ground. They call the foul on Kemba. He's pissed. Brad's chiming in. And he gets one tech. I think there were some F-bombs dropped in there. He gets another tech. He's out of the game. They ejected Kemba Walker for complaining about one call with two technicals. Brutal display of officiating. I forget the ref's name who ejected him. Mike Gorman had it queued up, and that's why he's Mike Gorman and I'm Bobby Manning. So just a horrific stretch of defense did the Celtics in this one. Full credit to the Spurs, who took advantage of everything the Celtics gave them and made some ridiculous shots to boot. I mean, I don't know how the Spurs come in 15 and 20. I don't know how Walker's averages are that low, because this team rings of me to all the great things Greg Popovich usually preaches. The movement was extraordinary. There was no room for lazy defense on the Celtics' end of things today, and it did them in early in this one. So that's two games in a row. We have some horrid defensive efforts from the Celtics. Aside from Daniel Tice, who I believe was contesting players at the rim quite effectively. Picked up a block, five rebounds. I liked his effort. He's a minus 13 as opposed to Brown, Tatum, Hayward, who were the worst culprits in this one. And that's where the problems are right now for the Celtics. On the wing, they're not able to stop dribble penetration. Therefore, they're not able to get out on the shooters. Defense is collapsing a lot. And we're just seeing some horrid returns from a team that let Ish Smith go to work the other day when I was hosting. Now let's Lonnie Walker light them up. DeMar DeRozan all but unstoppable off the dribble in this one. Tatum and Hayward took turns taking a beating from LaMarcus Aldridge, who didn't go off but made those spot shots in this one. Spurs with six guys making over three shots in this one. Oop, excuse me. That was the Celtics. Eight guys on the Spurs with three or more field goals made. And this wasn't a game of free throws. This wasn't a game of officiating as much to me. Spurs take 26 at the line. Celtics take 30. This was just a story of a team brutally knocking down shots. And wouldn't surprise me if for the 20th season straight or whatever it's going to be at this point, the Spurs are in the playoffs again. They only have Portland to knock off in that race. And although Melo is doing his thing, 28 points in the game winner against Toronto yesterday. I think the Spurs got them when they play like this. Those are my opening thoughts. We'll get to yours on the other side of this break. I'll be joined by Causeway Street's own Joel Pavone at some point. When I see his number flash up here, I'll pull him in. In the meantime, it's Bobby Manning. It is the Celtics post-game show on CLNS Media. Stick with us on CLNS Media for all the post-game coverage from the locker room. And yes, I know you're waiting. Taco Fall plays some real minutes for the Celtics. I owe Nick Sesento $5. See you on the other side. 347-215-7771.
Tonight's episode of the Celtics post-game show on CLNS Media is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. Get easy seasonal recipes and pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door. All you have to do is cook and enjoy. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/CLNS80. And don't forget to enter the promo code CLNS80 at checkout. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit and a sponsor of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show.
Darrell Summers, and you are listening to CLNS Radio, the home of online sports talk radio.
I didn't know who that was on the call sign right there. As you know, CLNS Radio is in its 10th year. We've been having fun on the Celtics postgame show all year long. And you can subscribe to us if you can't stay up late. Not that late today. No excuse for you not to be calling in 9:30 Eastern unless you're over in Spain. One of my people listening over in Spain. Come on down. 347-215-7771 is the number. Expecting heavy criticism for this team. And I'm not letting them off the hook. They've played well all year. And to see them collapse like this defensively, which is where they've made their record, 25-10 now on this season, it's a little discouraging. What can Stevens do to get this team right? He tried playing Taco Fall, which was a little shocking midway through this game. Crowd loved it. Crowd loved that big run that they went on a lot more. Tatum tipping balls in the backcourt. Enes Kanter keeping balls alive inside. I mean, they played all the cards that they could in this game, including those Taco minutes. He goes zero in this one in terms of plus-minus during that four-minute stretch that he played. I think he got a defensive rebound, rotated in a couple plays, but they were honestly just dropping him back. The way they do Enes Kanter, to be completely honest, and having him protect the rim, stay on his feet. So here's the thing. For the Sesentos and everyone else out there who thinks he's going to help this team, it was nice to see. I don't think he got blown away out there by any stretch. Forbes, Walker did get some threes on the rotations that the Spurs identified when he was out there, and absolutely nobody was bamboozled by him. Caught a pass in the lane, was holding the ball way too low, and Jakob Poeltl knocked it right out. So, first real minutes for Taco Fall, kudos, but not a solution by any means, especially when he's going to be playing the same defensive system as Enes Kanter, who wasn't great by any stretch in this one either. He got torched against the Wizards. It wasn't that bad, but he does go -8 in this one, 1-3. Not a huge help in 17 minutes. So he's certainly not the solution. The bench isn't the solution, even though I felt like they held their own through stretches with Tatum playing alongside them. So let's take your calls, 347-215-7771. We're brought to you by HelloFresh. We're brought to you by betonline.ag. And with the playoffs, another round coming this weekend, no Patriots, but that might make it a little easier for you to bet. This weekend, we have Seahawks, Saints. No, Saints are out. Vikings. See how I expected that one to go. 49ers still alive. Ravens, Chiefs going at it with the Texans and Titans. So who's going to make it to the conference finals? Make your picks and head on over to betonline.ag. Use the promo code CLNS50 to get your 50% welcome bonus. Put in a dollar, get 50 cents back free to bet with this weekend on any NBA games. I'd be betting against the Celtics if I was you, the way they're playing tomorrow night against Philly, where they're going to be facing the Joel Embiid-less 76ers. But that's also going to allow the 76ers to spread things out a little more, play with some more pace. Al Horford will get to play center for them. Hasn't played well of late. In fact, he's in the midst of probably his worst season. Not able to get that hook to go. He's had some problems going alongside Embiid without spacing. They haven't used him the way that the Celtics did by having him play the high post, initiating offense through him often. It's a cluster right there right now, a big, big cluster. So this is prime time for the Celtics to jump out and beat them. But, of course, we looked at the minutes last game. Creeping into the 30s. Tatum goes over 30 in this one. Brown, Hayward left under 30 just because of the crunch time blowout. I guess the refs assisted Stevens and gave Kemba some rest in this one, 17 minutes. So let's hit it on. Oh, the schedule, the wild schedule that the Celtics are on right now, they won't get more than a day off between now and the All-Star break. All these back-to-backs, is it wearing down on this defense? Can they play as aggressively as they have to win these games? Are guys just going to burn out on this perimeter, and we're really going to see the Celtics start tanking over the next week or two? They're a resilient squad. I'm sure the effort will be a lot better than it's been against the Wizards and the Spurs in this one. But we'll see. We go to 857 first on the Celtics postgame show. Welcome.
What's up, Bobby? It's Joel, man. How we doing? How we doing, man?
Oh, all right. I thought you were going to log into the computer. Nice to get you on board. I mean, I've done all the talking for 15 minutes. It's bad. It's all bad in this one. Do you have any positives from this one, or are you going to keep the bad train rolling?
I was patiently waiting, and I said to myself, what can I take away? What good can I take away from this? And if you thought I was pissed off a couple nights ago when you and Joe were hosting when they lost to the Wizards, what do you think I'm going to feel after a game like this where Kemba comes back? You know, it's Marcus Smart Day on NBC Sports Boston, and the Celtics just come out flat. So I got no positives to take away from this game because it's not going to get any better. This is the month where they're playing 16 games and very, very few days off in between. So you know what that means. Not a lot of practice time, a lot of traveling in between. I mean, they're going to Philly tomorrow night. I know it's, you know, without Joel Embiid and all, but these are the games that you're supposed to, you know, be somewhat competitive in. If they couldn't come out and beat the Wizards, then tonight was supposed to be much more competitive. You know, you did have a day off, and you're back at home where you barely have lost. And, you know, you saw a rally in the process before Kemba got ejected on the BS non-call there by Aldridge setting an illegal pick, which it didn't matter to me. Two T's, maybe one T, because you know Kemba did go off on an F-bomb tirade there. But I mean, after that was all she wrote, because Celtics couldn't get anything going after that, after the Kemba Walker ejection there. So I don't know, man. Like, this is not good. We're talking about three out of the last four games that the Celtics are coming out, you know, flat and having to climb out of a double-digit hole. They did it against Atlanta. I mean, that was the Atlanta Hawks. They were able to pull that off, and obviously they controlled the whole game against Chicago, but not so much against the Wizards. Never led in that one, and they didn't lead in this one. 8-0 run to start off the game by the Spurs, and they never looked back. So I got nothing positive to say about this game. This was supposed to be, another game where Hayward kind of disappeared a little bit. You know, he did have, you know, the two threes to start the fourth quarter. They're like, all right, maybe the Celtics got something going here. But after that, I didn't see Hayward the rest of the night. Tatum once again comes out flat. Jaylen Brown tried to be aggressive as he has been the last few games, but a lot of missed layups, a lot of careless passes, like lazy passes, and a lot of turnovers. I don't know, man. Maybe the schedule's starting to catch up to this team, and that's not looking good for the month of January.
Yeah, if that's the problem, it's going to be a long month. This is usually a tough month for this team anyway. Most teams around the NBA is getting to the slog heading into the All-Star break. This guy, Evan Scott, I mean, I don't know how you feel. Maybe the Celtics keep things rolling. The crowd was going nuts. You had a beer flying onto the sideline in front of the Spurs bench. It was that kind of night for the crowd. I love what the crowd was doing in this one. It's a Wednesday night, Joel. I think the tickets were cheap, $30. You had some rowdy people getting in there and making it happen. So the crowd did not disappoint by any stretch. This team did, and so did the refs. I mean, what a horrible, disgusting call by this guy, Evan Scott, who is in his first season reffing in the NBA. He spent the last 3 years in the G League. The Celtics are calling up Taco for some assistance, and I guess the refs are calling up this guy as well. And he just threw two technicals on Kemba for the same complaint. I mean, come on, what are you doing? If he complains once, if it's something ridiculous later in the game, I guess throw him out. But that's one play, one call. Brad gets a technical there too. So the, you know, Spurs effectively get five free throws in a row right there between Aldridge and I believe it was White who was heading to the line at that point. So that's a massive moment as the Celtics had gotten within single digits in this game. Hard to ignore. I don't know what that guy's thinking on that play. probably regrets it, probably overreacting a little bit. I don't know how much guys are complaining in the G League, but I don't know. That was just a perplexing call to me. I mean, this guy, I'm looking at his page right now, his favorite movie is Inception. He made the wrong call. He was living in a different world. Like, I just don't know what he saw there. I imagine what he heard. What he heard was probably what ejected Kemba from the game. But, I mean, Kemba, come on. This guy's never been ejected in an NBA game. Probably has never been ejected in his life. It was just one of the weirdest calls we've seen all year watching this team.
Yeah, man, it's just one of those things. You're right. Like, this is Kemba's first ejection in his 8-9 year, you know, NBA career. It's like, you know, I get it. This is gentleman's first year in the NBA reffing. But I mean, if you don't like pay attention to like the game of basketball as a whole, and you don't kind of have a sense of what kind of person like Kemba Walker is, then you're gonna have a hard time reffing. You know, the rest of this season and beyond. Because I'm not excusing Kemba. You know, let's not get that, you know, twisted. In terms of, yeah, Kemba probably most likely did deserve the first take. But like you said, he was in the middle of his first complaint when he immediately got the second one. And even the other, I remember the second ref that was right next to him. Even he pointed at like Brad, saying like, "Is it him? Who are you tossing right now?" Because they were confused of what was going on right there. It was a lot of stuff going on that even the Garden crowd tried to get into it, and I, obviously, you know, there was a band that was ejected because they were throwing things onto the court, which I don't.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that,
that
I don't
was
the veteran
going over there sorting it out. Rodney Motz in his second decade reffing, so I mean he was trying to come in there and sort things out a little bit, and things did get out of control right there. I mean, the crowd was going nuts. Like, that's just not how you want to handle that situation.
Yeah, even Patty Mills had to, like, kind of, like, back up Kemba a little bit, saying, like, relax a little bit and calm down. But after that, the whole momentum just switched. And I feel like there's too many of these, like, types of calls that are affecting the games in more ways than one. And the NBA's got to look into it because – I bet you if they look back on that or they get together with the other three refs or the other two refs and they talk about what happened or they replay that, I guarantee you they'll see like, yeah, that was you maybe you went too quickly on that one or you blew the whistle for the second check way too quickly on that aspect. But what happens though with the NBA? The NBA there's no consequences when it comes to referees touching the call or making the incorrect call, and so then we talk about this all the time, and I feel like it's a topic of discussion constantly now, and I think a lot of casual NBA fans get turned off by the product because of things like this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there was in the year two, I forget who was against where. Brown just got blatantly shoved down in crunch time. Might have been against, no, I don't think it was a Kings game, but you might remember that play. It was late in the game. Celtics were pulling off a comeback. Brown just got shoved down on the inbound, so Tatum threw it over him and out of bounds. Wish I knew what game that was off the top of my head. But that was a moment that had me fuming earlier in the year that I felt like decided a game. I got to look back. Because the Celtics haven't lost many games this year, so it'd be easy to see who that was against if I was able to pull it up real quick here. My thing in this one, the NBA is worried about ratings. They're worried about fan interest, all that kind of stuff. And I compare it to another play, the game right before the Wizards beat the Celtics. Forget who they were playing as well, but Isaiah was along the sideline, got shoved into the ref, maybe gave him a little push on his way down. I don't know what was happening there. But they eject Isaiah right out of that game as well.
That was like 20 seconds into the game. It was really early into the game. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't remember who the Wizards were playing, but that was a quick toss in that game. Yeah, I know exactly which game that was. I'm trying to remember the team that they were playing, but yeah.
Yeah, so you're pulling the stars out of these games. You know, like you can't be doing that if you want people to stay engaged. Especially in a game like this that was really starting to look exciting. The Celtics figured it out offensively during that stretch. We're making plays on defense. I love what Tatum did in that one in that regard. So, yeah, I don't love it. You know, one technical, go forward. Kemba has to be more careful. He knows it in his head at that point. He ejected him within seconds of giving the first one. And, you know, I don't think complaining is ever a too technical call.
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, Kemba's never been ejected in his NBA career. And, you know, I think he's allowed to be upset because that was a blatant non-call. So if you give him the first one, fine, whatever. He's still in the middle of his complaining. You know, tell him or warn him, like, hey, if you keep it up, I'm going to give you the second one and you're out of here. But he never even gave him that chance. So it is what it is. Kemba might as well just taken the freaking night off and, you know, got ready for tomorrow instead of coming back from the flu or the cold or whatever he was out with. And now, you know, it looks bad. It looks bad for Kemba, if anybody who didn't watch the game, but it is what it is. Let's see what happens tomorrow, but let's talk about this one because this really is not looking good for the Celtics in terms of like their defense as of late. They're really playing lazy defense, and I'm not feeling it at all. What's your take?
Of course, the fans were right on Cantor about that Wizards game, and he was bad in that one, rotating inside when they were running Ishmith off these picks that they were. A lot of this stuff is just straight line penetration, though, and the wings on this team are so crucial, Joel. I say it over and over again because it's going to make or break this team. These guys are making up for some of the interior weaknesses that the Celtics have, and in this one, with so many wings, so many guards going at them from different directions, and then Aldridge able to hurt you down the middle on top of it. I mean, Hayward and Tatum were not able to handle those post-ups he was throwing at them. This was a team in the Spurs that was well-equipped to, you know, beat up on a team that wasn't giving it great effort on the wings, moving it inside and out. I love what they're able to do. I'm honestly surprised that they're a team that's below 500. I guess that just shows how hard the Western Conference is. So this team needs maximum intensity from its wings. There's no other way they're going to be able to play great defense as a team with their weakness at point guard, frankly. You know, we haven't talked a lot about that Kemba's not the greatest defender in the world. And then interior, major weaknesses in there as well when you get into the bench units. I don't think this is a long-term problem, Joel. It just worries me that they're in a schedule right now that's probably going to wear away at those wings. They're not getting a lot of rest in terms of nights off. You know, Brad doesn't really do the night off thing with those guys. So it's going to be tough as long as they're playing every other night for the wings to maintain that intensity. I don't want to just throw it on the schedule. Maybe they just overlooked these last two opponents. But that wasn't something they were doing earlier in the year, Joe. I mean, they were 16-1 against bad teams. So now that the schedule gets a little tighter, what was this, the fifth game in seven nights? It's starting to look real bad for them.
Yeah, you're right. Like it takes a toll on you when you have to keep constantly coming out of double-digit holes. And I know Smart is coming back from being out. And I know obviously Kemba, same thing. So, I guess you still need a couple – maybe Smart needs a couple more games to get back in rhythm because I feel like he's been a step or two behind on defense. Kemba as well, obviously, he's going to have to, you know, play another game or two where I feel like he'll be back, you know, with his offensive rhythm. But in the meantime, though, these guys, you know, we've been bigging up the bench. I know me and you have. They need to step up as well. You know, Brad Wanamaker, I feel like has been MIA these last couple of games. And you got guys like you know, Grant Williams playing, you know, sporadic minutes here and there. They gotta pick up the slack a little bit because we don't know when Robert Williams is gonna come back. You know what I'm saying? Like he's gotta go see a specialist, I believe, on his hip and I think that hip injury is more serious than people realize. So going forward you gotta go back to playing that team defense on the perimeter and on the inside. And I don't see that right now. And then that's affecting the offense. I feel like they're settling for jumpers instead of taking it to the hoop.
It's really concerning on the Williams front. And I've been concerned about him since they drafted him. You don't get a guy that good. I mean, he was playing great for them early this season to the point where I thought he might end up being the starting center by the end of the year. But then you get a knee concern. Yeah, you get an ankle issue with him. It's just all lower body stuff that's piled up for him. And it all seems to be related there was a, something about blood flow in his legs when he was drafted that caused him to fall back to 27th like he did. So maybe he hurts that hip. The blood flow isn't great there. I think he had fluid in the hip as well. There's a lot of concerns with this guy's lower body and staying healthy in general that make you wonder if, you know, there were damaged goods there that kept 26 other teams from drafting him when he was clearly a top 10, 15 prospect in that draft.
Yeah, I mean, he's been out for what now, like 3 weeks now, right? And he still needs to be looked at. He's got to go to New York to be looked at by a specialist. And from there, if anybody's guessed, if he'll even be able to come back this season or he'll need some type of surgery, who knows? But the Celtics are keeping tight lip on that. And I feel like they don't even know how serious that injury is. And you're right. He was playing well before he went down. And I felt like he could have eventually caught, you know, grabbed that starting five spot. And him and Tice were playing well off each other in terms of like their minutes. And I don't know, now with these last few losses and the way they've been playing defense, especially on the inside there the last like 3 to 4 games, it's tough and begs the question now, does the Celtics need to make a move? And I know, you know, they're kind of handcuffed to what they want to do in terms of, you know, moving any of the core five or getting a guy that's making like $5 or $7 million to come in and a veteran guy to come in and shape up the bench a little bit. I don't know, Bobby. I'm not trying to panic, but it's not looking good these last 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, and it's not going to get any better tomorrow against Philly. I know Embiid's out, which is a massive break for them. But there are still guys that can hurt you there between Ben Simmons. Al Horford, this is exactly what they brought Horford there to do. And they might even end up looking better in this game than they have in some of the other ones. And I know Embiid's killed the Celtics, but they brought Embiid there to be that backup center presence. When Embiid's tired, when he's not healthy, this guy can fill right in and give them, you know, relatively stable production in terms of setting other guys up. So I'm still concerned about tomorrow. And then, you know, there's other teams coming up, the Pelicans, the Bulls, the Pistons. The Bulls nearly beat the Celtics on January 4th, just a few games ago, before the Seas turned it up late and ran away with that second half. They pretty much willed that game away with offense. But even in that one, Celtics allow 104 to them. So overall, they had a tougher time with the Hawks a couple of nights ago. They slipped away late in that one. It's been since 2019 that they've really ran away with a game against a bad team. And they still have some lined up here. Blake Griffin's out for the season for the Pistons. I'm just so unimpressed with Chicago. Saturday, do we see Zion? Do we not? I'm leaning toward no now with some of the news that we've heard on him. So that Pelicans team hasn't been that spectacular. Although they have guys, Brandon Ingram, J.J. Redick, who can hurt you. It's very concerning where this could go, because let's look ahead. Tomorrow, Saturday, the Bulls on Monday. I mean, that's, again, 3 games over 5-6 nights. We're talking Thursday, Saturday. No, that's 3 games in 5 nights. It doesn't settle down at all this month for this team. So I don't know. What do? Do you start to mix in a guy like Tremont Waters a little more, try to give the guard some relief, give Smart a little more minutes on the wing instead of having him be that switch-out guy with Kemba? I don't know what they're going to have to do going forward here. They definitely have depth on this roster. You could utilize Javonte Green a little bit more as he started to play a little bit better. I liked what he gave them tonight. You know, this is on Brad. Brad has to manage this stretch effectively. If something's not reacting right, then there must be something that they're doing differently as a coaching staff, because this team effort was never an issue before the new year, Joel. I don't think there were any low effort stinker games at all in the 2019 stretch.
No, you're right. You're right. There hasn't been. And I feel like ever since the new year, it's just been like, you know, these like, falling into a hole, trying to climb out, you know, you feel like they're getting lazy on defense. Then I know there's people that have, there are players that have been injured, coming back from injury, the traveling, the crazy schedule of, you know, you you go, you travel to a city, and you come back home, and you travel again, but again, it's not going to get any easier. And this is the schedule. This is the life of an NBA player. And Brad, like you said, Brad's got to figure it out. Brad's got to, you know, make some changes if he has to. And it's hard because, you know, they're not going to have a lot of practice time because of these back-to-back and the few days off in between. So Brad and the rest of the coaching staff has got to figure something out, you know, when it comes to these substitutions or these trying to mix and match with the starters and the bench guys. When you see Taco fall out early in the first quarter, you know, when they're down by nearly 20 points.
What do you think of that?
I mean, it was great for the crowd because the crowd got into it because you felt like the crowd was out of the game early on. But I mean, I'm sorry, Taco looked a little lost out there in terms of trying to keep up on both ends of the floor. So you know, he still has some work that needs to. He's a work in progress. I'm not gonna crap all over Taco, you know, in a game like this, because it was more like, you know, Brad was just trying to figure out different things. You know, you had Javonte Green out there in the first quarter, didn't see much of him in the second half. I would have loved to see Devontae Green maybe play a little bit more minutes, rather than him play about the same amount of time than Taco did. But I don't know. I'm scratching my head on this one after these stretch of games.
Only 9 minutes for Green, and he goes plus 11 in those minutes. I think that's definitely a point we have to highlight. He could use some more time. He's an energy guy. He has the athleticism to defend. I don't know if he's fully integrated into the system to the point where he can defend what they're trying to do up there. He absolutely has part of the plan to get these guys some rest. And honestly, do they really need Tatum, Hayward, and Brown going every night, Joel? I mean, you have Smart who can fit in alongside Kemba well. They almost look better when he's fitting in that starting lineup alongside Kemba than they do with this three-wing lineup. So, I mean, it's the middle of January. Everybody's doing it around the league. Hate it or love it. It helps the best teams get into the playoffs healthy. They never gave Al nights off here, but you would see nights where he would be coasting a little bit, trying to take it easy and save his best burst for the playoffs. And he would get crapped on a lot for those nights that he wasn't on. But come playoff time, he was ready to roll every year. Why not sit down Hayward for a game here or there? Get Brown a night off. I mean, he's been playing with so much intensity on both ends of the court. They're young. You know, they're up and coming. Maybe they don't have the status in Brad's eyes to get just simple nights off. I mean, I think he wants everybody in the room engaged. I don't think he wants to cast that dispersion on his locker room. But in terms of a basketball approach, it does be a good thing to get a guy a night off here or there. I'm not saying go Kawhi and give him 1-2 nights off every week. I don't know, some of those guys down tomorrow against Philly. You know, it's a big game against a conference rival, but you know, this team needs to be playing at full intensity every single night. Some of these bench guys probably have a little bit more of a burst to give them than the starters are showing right now. That's what it looked like to me in this game, didn't it to you, Joel?
I mean, I would agree with you if Hayward had been healthy all season long. But Hayward, I feel like we haven't seen the same Hayward since he's been back in terms of him being more involved in all, like, in a lot of the playmaking and a lot of the offense. I feel like he's still trying to, like, get back to that Hayward that we saw prior to his hand injury. And I feel like the only, like, Hayward game that we saw, like prior to his hand injury since he's been back was the game where Jaylen Brown was out against the Hornets. So I think it was New Year's Eve game, the early start game when Hayward came out and he had a near triple double, and I was like, okay, that's the Hayward that we saw, you know, and prior to the hand injury. And I said we haven't seen much of that. I'm not saying he's got to put up like triple double numbers or, you know, I'm the closer. I'm just saying I want to see him more involved in the playmaking, especially these games that Kemba didn't play. And I haven't seen much of that. I feel like he's been, you know, very quiet. Tonight he had 18 points.
surprised he
could. No, I thought he was good tonight. I think you had a valid point after the Wizards game, but in this one, it was very concentrated in that third, fourth quarter when they went on that run, I'll say. Especially, you know, he had a few of those at the beginning of the fourth when this was pretty much over, like you said. But when him and Kemba were going out there in cohesion, they were swapping off possessions, they were freeing each other up a little bit, that was a really effective thing that the Celtics were throwing at the Spurs. And the Spurs had a tough time handling it. I don't want to throw it all on Kemba getting ejected in this one, Joel, but it definitely threw off what the Celtics were trying to do offensively, put a lot more pressure on Tatum, Brown, and those wings to create, because we all know Kemba has been at his best in the fourth quarter this year.
That's very true. That's very true. And you also have to throw in the fact that the Celtics just can't keep coming, you know, climbing out of these holes. Like, they shouldn't have been in that deep of a hole to begin with. When it comes, I'm not taking anything away from the Spurs. You know, it's they're a Greg Popovich coach team. Like any Greg Popovich coach team, like, you got to be they're dangerous. You got to be careful, because I mean, they came out aggressive from the jump, and for the most part, like, let's not forget, like, you know, they probably came in here thinking about that loss that they were trying to avenge back in like November against the Celtics. It's the same game actually where Hayward, you know, broke his hand. So
that was
like
a blowout the other way.
Exactly, and that was and if I remember correctly, at that point we were all talking about how that was the best of this game, that Celtics win that we have saw, you know, so far up to that point. And I think tonight was probably their worst loss. I can't think of another game like this that comes to mind where it was just from start to finish they just played like offensively played like crap. Maybe the Wizards game, but I mean that still was a winnable game. This game here, then, you know, other than that little burst where they got within seven before Kemba got ejected, I didn't see much offensive rhythm for the most part. And I feel like when the Celtics get down offensively, there's got to be someone that comes and steps up, whether it's the starters, somebody from the starters or somebody from the bench that is able to just get that spark. I don't know how else to kind of explain that. Like, it's just this. I feel like there's, when everyone's off, everyone's off. It's like there's no one that kind of is. I'm not trying to say like someone that's going to hijack the offense either and take upon themselves to just, you know, not pass anyone and just go down and, you know, no, and like shoot. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about someone that, you know, someone like a Kemba Walker, I guess. You know, and not that Kemba Walker was having a great offensive night either. I mean, he did play limited minutes, minus the ejection. But when Kemba was out, the three or four games that he was out, like you could tell that he was missing in these games, because he's someone that could create his own shot, that can, you know, get to the free throw line. And I feel like the Celtics lack that when he's not in the lineup, and sometimes even when he is in the lineup. So I think the Celtics need to work on that.
I'll give the Spurs a lot of credit too. Man, did they play a great game, and it was beautiful to watch. I was very confident that the Celtics could push back into this one when they got down by that much in the first quarter. I think this went to 18 in the first quarter, right? They were almost down 20 right from the jump. And so I'm like, all right, this is so early. There's going to be that swing back. And the Spurs just kept pushing it. They were getting into the lane repeatedly. They kept forcing up great shots. Like, they were not being complacent with that lead. And right through halftime, they were keeping it between 16 and 20 points. There was no pushback possible at all from Boston. And, you know, this wasn't the Wizards. That loss was just so frustrating. You're hosting tonight, Joel, so you had to call in, but you weren't hosting that night that you called in after the Wizards game. Like, that was just how disgusting that effort was against a much worse team. I know they can play offense and all that, but to get shut down the way they did was a little frustrating. Celtics had some spark in this one, especially from Tatum on that run that they went on. He was giving them great plays on the perimeter. He was tipping out passes. He was dunking in transition. And the crowd was going crazy during that run that they got within eight. So at least they had some pushback in this one. So I'm not going to be as low on this one as I was after the Wizards game. But overall, beautiful game by the Spurs. I'm surprised they're not better. And what they deserve credit for too, Joel, they were stealing off that lane again and again, bringing in Aldrich on some help when the wings were getting beat. Like, they just had a great defensive game plan in their own right in this one that held the Celtics out of the lane, had them spotting up on jumpers. This is the downside to Smart, too, as we keep talking about Marcus Smart day. In games like these where it's not working, he had a nice pass to Tyson in the lane that I felt like opened up the offense a little bit. But overall, he was just spotting up. And he had a few makes early on in this one, but then he just started bricking them left and right. Rhythm threes weren't falling for the Celtics, just like they weren't against the Wizards, which is a little concerning. Like, they were setting up good shots that just weren't falling. I mean, Hayward and, let's see, Tatum and Brown combined in this one only hit 5 threes out of, say, 18 tries, 5 for 18. So, rough shooting night again from them, throwing Smart. It's 7 for 26. That was off the top of my head right there. So, just poor shooting night overall, undermined them early. What do you think about them shooting as many threes in a game like this to try to get back, even try to set the tone early? They took 4 straight threes out of the gate in this one. I know if they're there, take them, but you got to get to the lane a little bit too during that stretch.
Well, I feel like that kind of dictates their offense early. Like, if they're aggressive and it's like you get that extra pass and then you get, like, you know, the open, you're hitting the open shot, what is the three or just inside the 3-point line, and they're hitting those shots early, it's going to be a good shooting night. If they're taking it to the hoop and they're getting to the free throw line, and you can tell that they're aggressive, then I think that's more promising than just starting off by shooting threes and jumpers. I mean, they shot 41% tonight. They've been shooting in the low 40s and, like, you know, high 30s these last few games, and that's not promising. I mean, even the Spurs, for example. I mean, they only made 9 threes on 29 attempts, but they scored 50 points in the paint. So they were taking it to the hoop at ease, and they shot for the game 55%. So, I mean, what does that tell you right there? It's like the Spurs, they got hot early, and it wasn't just necessarily making threes, because they shot a poor percentage from three. Celtics made 13 threes on 38 attempts. And I feel like these last few games that they've lost, they've you know, been chucking up a lot of threes. And I feel like they feel like, you know, when they're in these holes, they're just going to try to shoot their way out of it. And some nights it works, and some nights it hasn't. But lately it hasn't. And so then I feel like they got to, you know, get that extra pass. That's why I'd like to see more, you know, when Kemba's been out, I'd like to have seen more of Hayward, you know, be like the guard or even Smart. When Smart, you know, when he has that mentality of the pass first rather than the shoot first, I feel like he's very effective. I mean, Brad Wanamaker is usually the guy who puts his head down and kind of just takes it to the hoop or, you know, takes a shot. And at times when he tried to pass, I saw there was one play tonight against the Spurs when he tried to he faked the shot and threw it to Cantor. Cantor wasn't expecting it. Cantor was waiting for the rebound because he thought he was going to shoot it. And you know, you gotta find other ways to make that pass if it looks like you're going to shoot it, because that's what Brad Wanamaker usually does. So, I mean, I feel like the assists have been low for the Celtics as of late. They're not coming out. They're not moving the ball as much, I feel like, in these last few games as they did at the beginning of the season. And that's not good.
As they've faced teams with better backup centers, I honestly love Washington's big men, Thomas Bryant. Whoever that guy's name, he had a very complicated name, and I hate to insult him that way, but, you know, I just can't pronounce off the top. He played very effectively off the bench for the Wizards against Cantor. And then in this one, you have Jakob Poeltl, who was awesome, I thought, coming off the bench for them. I mean, he just was tipping balls out on the inside, staying on the rebounds, great energy. That guy's been really good for them since the Kawhi Leonard trade. Probably an underrated acquisition in that one.
Yeah.
Much like the guy in the Rondo trade who's been playing really well for Dallas, Dwight Powell. Like, those underrated throw-in big men that end up finding spots on other teams. It's nice to have that second guy in rotation off your bench. Because honestly, for Kanter, and I know I've given him a lot of love this year, when there is another guy, a competent guy on the other team who comes in rotation, he's not able to eat it up as much. There's a lot of teams around this league that only really have one big guy, like Toronto, for example. Kanter just killed Toronto because they only really had Chris Boucher in those games coming in and playing the middle when Marc Gasol was out. These games, I mean, it's just been flat, empty games from Kanter. He grabs the 6-7 rebounds, which is nice, but he doesn't initiate any offense, whether in the passing or scoring game.
Yeah, you're right. But then that, I think that might also have to do with the guards or anyone trying to set him up either, because he only took three shots tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, if he doesn't have any attempts, it's not like he's putting up attempts and, you know, and not making them. He's just not putting up attempts, period.
He was 1-for-3 in this one. That one was a jump shot early on.
That was a jump shot, exactly. That was like the first quarter. You know, when Brad was scrambling, trying to throw anybody in there to, you know, stop the bleeding. And Kanter actually hit the first jumper that any Celtics player had actually made was Kanter, because they were
him
just,
and Hayward were the only ones scoring in the first 4 or 5 minutes for sure. 860 is with us. We're getting late in the show here, but on the betonline.ag call line, we finally have a caller. 347-215-7771 to close this one out. Welcome, 860.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's going on?
Hey, who we got here?
This is Mike Munger, the Scotsman.
Oh, perfect. Oh, what a great night for the Scotsman. Oh, man, we had the rookie ref, Mike. We had the ejection that just completely threw off that Celtics run. They deserve a ton of criticism for the way they play defense in this one, but that was as bad of an ejection as I've ever seen watching the Celtics. I don't know how you feel about that ranking.
Oh, yeah, I think it's funny because I wasn't home at the beginning of the game. I had to, like, try to catch up because, you know, one of my kids had something going on. So I got home, and I'm getting messages left and right, you know, like being tagged on social media. Oh, my God, you know, what are you doing right now? I'm getting messages. What's this guy's name? From people at the game, they're like, wait till you see it on TV. So I fast forward through the first half because I was like, all right, well, I saw the score. What is this clown doing? Like, I'm going to assume this is kind of a PG show nowadays compared to the old days when I was on, but unbelievable what this clown was doing. Kemba Walker, a guy who was, like, highly respected by the officials throughout the league. I don't even know if he has 10 total technicals in his career. Got treated like Rasheed Wallace did back in, you know, the 90s, for God's sakes. What was this clown thinking? First off, you missed the call. Own up to it, all right? And then when Kemba says his piece, If you give him one technical, whatever, because he might have said a bad word, walk away, all right? As officials, we're taught to de-escalate some of these situations. You go talk to the coach, you let them vent it out. But Kemba Walker is a very well-respected player. And when it's like, well, the thing was like 76-69, the Celtics had all the momentum in the game. I believe that was like a 5 or 6 free throw transition right there, because not only did they make the foul on Aldridge, they called
the
foul on Tice.
What's underrated about this is there were 3 technicals, 1 on Brad, 2 on Kemba. Are you kidding me? Like, there has to be a malice at the palace for 3 technicals to happen.
No, it's disgraceful because you don't see this going the other way. It's very rare that you see any kind of Celtics opponent have something like this happen to them. I've been telling people for years, it's not a secret, my views on the officials, even after becoming one many years ago. But this was absolutely disgusting. To use a word that I used to use on the torture chamber a lot, that was atrocious, absolutely atrocious. And I think it's disgraceful that this rookie referee, a guy who I think he had like 9 games under his belt before he entered this season. Why are you doing NBA games? Go do the G League. Go to the WNBA, that where no one's going to watch you make mistakes anyway. All right, just get off an NBA court. He shouldn't have been there. And then the other referee, the little bald marine-looking clown. He's the one that I think he's the one that gave the technical to Brad. It's like, come on, what are you doing? Are you even big enough to be on this ride? I think combined,
I know, they have a 22-year-old Ben there who should have been sorting out the situation. I mean, I don't know why those 2 younger guys were the ones leading this, you know, tense situation where the crowd's losing control. I mean, it was just a bad, bad way to handle this. And honestly, I don't know. I'm not going to go all the way and say it. dictated the result of the game, but pulling Kemba out of that the way it was going was a big, big moment. And the game went right back in the other direction. 19-point game within moments after that happened. Do you think they would have won if Kemba stayed in this one, Mike?
I mean, I think the odds were definitely in their favor that they could have come back and won, because you're looking at a guy who's just a shot maker. I mean, he can get buckets. We've seen it happen before plenty of times. He's got an Isaiah Thomas like mentality in the fourth quarter. He can take over. I mean, is it possible we could have lost? Yeah, there's no guarantee. But when you get a 22-point deficit down to 6 or 7 points, that close in the third, fourth quarter, and then something drastic happens to completely take the momentum out of it, I just think it is unprofessional. It was very rookie-like for that official. And it's, again, I understand Spurs Celtics doesn't have some of the luster that it did maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, when you had like the Spurs at their peak and the Celtics with, you know, Garnett, Pierce, whatever. But still, it's a veteran coach like Greg Popovich who you know is going to get on the officials. It's the one of the two best teams in the East, and a respected coach like Brad Stevens. So you know you're going to need good, solid veteran officials that can handle what's thrown at them in a situation like that. And these two clowns, like, seriously, honest to God, go back to McDonald's, you know, with your dumbass. It was pathetic, pathetic display of officiating. I think you could definitely see it got into the Celtics' heads. There was a few calls later where you couldn't believe it went against the Celtics. And it's almost like they, I don't say they checked out, they didn't quit, but it's almost like they just kind of reserved themselves to the fact that it wasn't going to be their night, and then, you know, turnovers, and it just continued to escalate, kind of got out of hand real quickly. But it all started at that one moment, and then, you know, again, there's no guarantee what's going to happen, but when you can kind of sit there and look at it, and here's what I want to know. If this was the Lakers or LeBron or one of the league's, you know, teacher's pet teams, if this was like a Giannis-led team that had gotten screwed like this, you know we'd see Nick Wright, on FS1 in the morning, all over it. Oh, the ref screwed such and such. You know, I can't believe they did this to LeBron and blah, 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 and LeBron and LeBron. Are they going to talk about it tomorrow? Or are they going to sit there and be like, well, you know, they shouldn't have complained, and, you know, it was their fault for, you know, are they going to do that? Or are they going to completely ignore it and do what they do and talk about, you know, what LeBron James had for lunch, and, you know, how is he the only person who can digest corn and doesn't come out in his crap? Or are they going to talk about the Cowboys or something stupid? So I'm curious to see how the media is going to handle it, because if this was any of like the favorite teams, the pet teams for the NBA, hell, if it was even the Sixers, or if it went the other way, they'd be like, oh, the referees helped the Celtics win, like it's a regular thing, like if it actually happens for us. So yeah, I'm curious to see what happens on First Take, or, you know, First Fake, or whatever the stupid shows are that those idiots are on, the talking heads are on. You know, see if they can take 5 minutes out of the LeBron fanboyism to talk about how we got screwed. But appreciate the time on the thing. Keep up the good work. You know, I usually listen now. I try not to get all animated on the shows, but for tonight and one night only.
Hey, it had to happen.
Hey, you know what? The refs still suck. They hate Boston. I can't say what I used to say because of the recent passing of David Stern, but you know, the refs suck and they hate the Celtics, and hopefully we can get them back sometime soon. So have a good night, guys. Go Seas.
Hey, appreciate the phone call.
All right, we won't see the Spurs again this year, but there have been two good ones between these two teams. And last year when they were at the Garden, it was a 20-point comeback as well. They actually completed it in March of last year. So it could have happened again. Probably took a large percentage chance out of that happening with that play right there. Joel, the Scotsman's well-known on this show. 10 years we've been doing it, and I guess he's seen the light. He is transformed into a referee himself, but in his prime, he would call in here and do some epic rants 10 times what we just heard against the referees. So it's only fitting we got him on that one tonight.
Well, I mean, that just shows you how, you know, how the reaction that people are displaying because of a blown call like that. You know, that affects the game, you know, in more ways than one. And if this was like a playoff game or like an important game for seeding purposes, then,
oh, forget, I mean, about it.
You know, this is gonna probably be talked about, like you said, by the talking heads on either ESPN or FS1. And
and that's just the way it is. But, you know, how many times have we seen this season alone when they talk about, like, LeBron James, for example, right? He brought up LeBron James. That was a great, point that he made, that early on there was the complaint by the talking heads was, oh, they're not giving LeBron James the calls anymore. He's not getting to the free throw line as much as he used to. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, I, all the years that, you know, he was getting to the free throw line on BS calls, and now that, you know, he's not getting the free throw line as much as he used to, you know, quote unquote used to, now it's like a ref against LeBron James type of thing. And it's like, come on, man. It's like you can't win one way or another. You can't have it both ways. It's like, you know, it's either like there's an issue with the refs as a whole, or there isn't an issue with the refs. But it's not like, you know, it's not like individuals or individual teams that, like, refs might have problems with, you know. It's like that something needs to be corrected as a whole. And, you know, they brought this new guy in. If that's true, that this is only his ninth game, you know, reffing this season, then, you know, that he needs to be looked at as someone that either needs to go back to the G League or maybe even reprimanded for, you know, somebody's good calls.
I don't think they're going to reprimand. They could do Kemba a solid. Actually, they're not going to. The NBA just came out with a statement on the call. Per rule, Kemba Walker used profanity towards an official, which led to the first technical foul. He continued to use profanity and was given a second technical foul and ejected. So they're not even going to rescind the second technical foul. Two instances of profanity.
And not even going to take a day to, like, you know, review that. It just, like, automatically just making that call, huh? It's like, wow. It's like, you know,
the NBA is very defensive of the refs. Yeah, and it's not even the NBA. I think the referees themselves have really tried to back themselves up when it comes to public perception. You know, they have that Twitter account now where they reflect on the calls that have been made and tell everybody why they made the right one. You know, I actually back them up on a lot of the Harden stuff. I've watched some videos on those Harden, you know, so-called travels, and they really, a lot of them aren't travels, so I'll back them up on those. But a lot of the time, yeah, they are coming out after controversial calls and saying, well, actually, here's why it was right. But again, this is all judgment, and maybe us in their shoes could have taken a little bit of profanity there, especially after we clearly made a wrong call. But to them, judgment call, they hear profanity, and two technicals for each of them, and that was the night for Kemba.
Yeah, but then, you know, what about the aspect of, you know, Kemba the person that, like,
so
bogus. Doesn't usually, you know, get, if Kemba got that heated, then that might tell you something, that maybe, like, you know, there was a lot of calls that could have gone either way before that non-call on Aldridge. So I don't know.
NBC was probably getting FCC violations back in the day for how much Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett were swearing during games. Like, come on.
Just Kevin Garnett alone. Just Kevin Garnett alone.
All right, that's our show for tonight. 7 o'clock tomorrow, we get 76ers Celtics, so the C's won't have much time to reflect and, you know, think about the language they used tonight. They're just going to have to get back out there and play better defense. And, frankly, I look at these records, Joel. We see why the Celtics are playing so much this month. 24-14. The Celtics are 25-10. That's a 3-game difference in terms of games played between these two. So they're essentially tied in the East. This is a huge one. The Celtics haven't beaten them this year. Joel Embiid is out. As we know, it is in Philadelphia. Celtics have to hop on a plane tonight. It's on TNT if you're going to watch. And we'll have 9:30 postgame right here on CLNS Media. Thanks to the Scotsman. Thanks for Joel for being here with me tonight. I am Bobby Manning, and we'll see you tomorrow night after Celtics 76ers. Enjoy, and good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.